Welcome to In the Name of Game.
Welcome once again to In the Name of Game, a video game podcast. Today is the 26th of September, 2013.
And we're back after, actually, this is our biggest hiatus yet, I think. Let's call it season three.
Season break.
Yes.
In the Name of Game.
In the Name of Game.
Yes, a video game podcast, which we say a million times.
Should we tell them about David first?
Let's introduce ourselves first. I'm your host, AG.
And I'm co-host Adam.
And I'm co-host Colin.
And I'm co-host Knox.
What Colin was trying to say was that David, who's our usual extra co-host, is doing a ton of real-life work at the moment, so he's on his own little hiatus for at least several months. But that's okay, because, you know, we still got a fair number of people. We got some great opinions, and I am really sick right now. So if I cough or if I sound more like a guy than usual, then you can just forgive me for that. But yeah, so there's been a lot of things in our absence that we've missed out on. And so we don't have like a 15-hour-long show. We're just going to kind of, you know, keep going forward. And I know...
Lightning round. Entire episode.
Yes.
Exactly. So Colin has some minor thing about Phil Fish, but we have a lot of other stuff.
Phil Fish.
What can I mention about Phil Fish? The asshole got out of video game development finally.
He fully went full blown.
He went full blown crazy on this one. When Marcus
soon we'll have Fez rehab and
yeah, Mark.
We posted about it on our Facebook.
We did, but I think that was around the time that we started our little hiatus for various reasons. And the main reason was that Marcus Beer, who I think works at Game Trailers, I forget what. He works at Game Trailers. The Annoyed Gamer. He said he called. Phil Fish and Jonathan Blow, the creative mind behind Braid and the upcoming game. What's it called? It's a Myst-like game. I forget what it's called. It looks like Myst. It's based on an island. It's a puzzle game and things like that. But he said that Blowfish, as he called him, were bitching and moaning about a request from a Game Informer, I believe, about what they thought about some sort of independent game development scheme going on.
I don't think Blow was quite as bad.
He wasn't. Well, Blow doesn't have quite the reputation that Phil Fish has, you know. And Beer was a little bit. Beer took them both to task, but he really took Fish. I mean, it was just like, it was basically just shooting fish in a barrel. No pun intended. But No pun intended.
But totally intended.
He called them wankers. He called them bitchers and moaners, and you know, and Phil Fish basically just said that I'm done with the game development, and there was much rejoicing. Yay!
Well, when that happened, a lot of people
talking about him.
Okay, all right. You're right. We probably should just kind of let it rest there until he pops up again inevitably.
Sliding round. Next topic.
So unless you've been under a rock, there's two major things that have happened this past week. One that we're going to expand upon is GTA 5. And we'll talk about that later. But what recently just was announced was more details on the Steam OS. So Steam is going to... granted, this is what I've been gathering from people. I haven't actually sat down and read the whole thing yet. Steam is going to have a beta for their their box that they're going to have. Their console. I mean, I don't know if I even want to necessarily call it a console, because from what I've gathered, it's going to be a tiered kind of set of console boxes. So it's like, for example, if you already have your PC that runs your Steam games fine, I believe they're going to have some kind of box that's like maybe like $100 or whatever that effectively just kind of streams your stuff from your PC.
So it's almost like an Apple TV sort of machine.
Yeah, pretty much, but for games.
Yeah.
And then if you don't have that, I believe they have like a next step up that's more of like more expensive, but also kind of runs things independently on that box. So I'm not sure for the beta that they're they're hyping up at the moment, if that is going to be for the streaming box or if it's actually for the higher tier box. But I know only a couple hundred people, 300 Yeah, we'll actually get the real hardware in their hands. So I'm sure a lot of people are really determined to win. Not to win. It is kind of like winning something, though.
Jesus. Poor Iggy.
Yeah, my cough. So basically for the Steam OS, the beta, you have to like join a specific Steam group. You have to try using big picture mode for a game, also using a controller, and then something else, like you gotta have at least 10 Steam friends.
I'm looking at it right here. It says join Steam Universe community or blah. Agree to their conditions. Make 10 Steam friends. Create a public Steam community profile, and then play a game using a gamepad in big picture mode.
Yeah. So for most people, that's pretty easy. I think the last one about the big picture mode with the controller, not everybody has done. Like I myself had to set up a controller to actually just do it. But other than that, I think as of this podcast, there's at least like 80,000 people that have passed that phase into like candidacy for the beta test. Yeah. But as I said, only like 300 people are actually going to get these things in their hands. So I'm not sure how they it might just be a random lottery.
It's less than 1% of the people getting one.
Yeah. But it kind of seemed par for the course for a lot of Valve stuff. So
yeah.
But yeah, so
I think it's cool that they're kind of forging out. It's almost like the independent console. It's I know how to spell it, but I don't know how to pronounce it. The Ouya, Ouya.
Ouya.
You heard of this thing?
Ouya.
Ouya. But I mean, it's sort of like this, but it seems a little more.
Well, the Ouya. I think some of the problems with that is that weren't some people saying the third party support is not super great for like the games.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. Is like, you know, it seems that, I mean, Valve is basing this operating system. Well, it's a Linux derivative first off, but second off, I mean, they obviously have the backing of, you know, all these games on Steam that they already have. I believe Gabe a couple of days ago in front of some conference, I can't remember exactly which one it was, but he said that, you know, we have hundreds of games, you know, and ready for Linux.
Well,
ready to operate on Linux.
Somebody caught, I think there was a promotional thing or something that said, in essence, like, oh, if we have like 3,000 games on Steam, that's 3,000 games you'll be able to play. But I thought somebody was like, wait, but only like at least half or less of those actually currently work like in Linux. So yeah. I'm not sure if that'll be something that's more like it's going to be streamed onto Linux, you know, like it's not really running on Linux, but you're just seeing it on there. I don't know how it's going to work.
The operating system, I mean, like you were talking before, if you have a computer that's capable of playing games on Steam. I don't. But, I mean, there are plenty of people I know who can play their games natively on a machine that they already have.
Right.
So the way I understand it is that Steam OS, if you have a machine that can already run these games, will effectively just stream these from your machine to, you know, this other machine that is going to be hooked up to a television or is already on a television. That's the point.
Yeah.
But I, you know, at the same time, it's like I understand the bit where they want to have an operating system for their own sort of hardware, for their own console of sorts. What I find strange is that they think that they need to have this operating system that's geared toward people who already have a machine that can run these sorts of.
I think that's just being more realistic because it's like if you're purely going with like the console approach. That might turn a bunch of people off because they're like, but I already have a PC. It's not like a PS4 or an Xbox thing where it's like a drastically different console and all that stuff. Like, you're still going to be playing PC games through Steam. It's just a matter of like, maybe some people feel it's kind of like redundant. You know what I mean? Like, if they already have a way of doing this, it's not like a console where it's a different beast altogether. And it's kind of going to be hard for them to sell the fact that like Steam is like a standalone console because people will still always have that kind of mental connection in their head that it's, you know, PC-based.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the approach you're taking probably is for the best. Like, for me, I mean, it's hard to tell without doing, you know, like a beta test whether their streaming cheapo version would work for somebody like me or not. Because I'm kind of the old school PC gamer where I'm totally fine with playing
at your desk. And
yeah, I was gonna say like an office kind of setup. Yeah. You know, like I don't need to be laying down on a couch.
Yeah.
But I do, for whatever reason, associate that thing, doing that, with console games.
Yeah.
Speaking of consoles, the two upcoming consoles have been kind of quiet-ish lately. Well, I guess they've kind of gotten.
They're leading up to Christmas. It's gonna, in the next month or so, I expect they'll start really heaping out the good shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the other thing too is I think maybe Microsoft is trying to kind of be a little bit more low key now that they've kind of screwed up things so bad.
After they really screwed the screwed the pooch at E3, yeah, it's a really oopsie daisy.
Yeah.
They did backpedal in our time away though. I remember seeing a couple of stories about them backpedaling about the Kinect thing. I remember specifically that they removed the always on Kinect requirement,
that they initially insisted would be necessary to do all these extra functions, which maybe it is, but I mean, you still need to offer an ability for people to not have to use that.
Funny how that works.
Yeah. So, PS4, they announced something more recently. Shit, I can't remember. Well, whatever. PS4 is still kind of coming out ahead. That's the only thing you need to know. That Xbox has kind of slightly recovered. People seem to be a little less pissed off at them now, I've noticed. But I'm not sure if it's, to the point where they're going to be plunking down money for that.
Nope.
Probably not.
Absolutely not.
Hasn't changed my mind.
Nope, not at all.
Pre-ordering that
PS4. Let's
see. So, in terms of other games, there was the Bioshock Infinite DLC announced while we were out, the Rapture.
Well, there were two, actually. The one that has to do kind of with what looks like a horde mode, almost.
Yeah, so my producer got the season pass.
Yeah,
so did DLC. I. You got it, too? So did you play the horde mode thing?
Yeah, I beat it all.
It's not horde mode. They're like challenges or something, right?
Right.
So it's if you like the gameplay of the existing Bioshock Infinite world, then it kind of expands on that and just gives you more, like, missions, essentially.
Specifically if you like the combat, yes.
Right. If you didn't like the combat, you probably want to skip it.
So I guess the game would be meh to me.
Did you not like the combat?
No, it was meh. It was okay. It was not as, I didn't feel as independent as I should have, considering the first Bioshock especially.
Right, but the interesting one that everyone's talking to is the one that looks like it takes place in Rapture, and got these different Booker and Elizabeth characters that are clearly them, but not them,
Yeah.
And,
We have some time fuckery going on here.
Yeah, the rumor, or maybe it's not a rumor at this point, I had heard when this was announced that it would actually be like a two-part DLC, which is why, for example, people are saying you should get the season pass because it'll just be easier in the long run. That the first part, I believe, is with Booker, or the Booker character, and then the second part
Like from the trailer.
Yeah, the second part is actually Elizabeth.
I thought I heard it was the other way around because I heard something about like the first part not being very action heavy.
Oh, really?
Or, like, it won't really feature combat. So I thought that was
it could be, unless they twist it around just to be different and be like, all the Booker stuff is more like in, because he's doing the detective work thing, right? So maybe it's more like detective investigative or something.
He's just supposed to be a PI in Rapture, it seems like.
Yeah, as opposed
to... I mean, that's what it said at the beginning of the trailer. It had him open... Just like in Bioshock Infinite, he opens the door and it says...
Right.
You can read it on the door. It says Booker DeWitt, private investigator, whatever they call it,
Yeah, Burial at Sea, right?
Yeah, it was called Burial at Sea.
Right. So I'm intrigued, so I'm going to check that out.
Well, shit, it's been Rapture. Well, the thing is that at first I was like, oh, God, they're doing Rapture again.
Which but it seems different, though.
But that brought to mind Bioshock 2, which was a disappointment. But what's new about this one is that Irrational said they used very little resources from the first two games in this version of Rapture. A lot of it is going to be new resources, which will be nice.
Well, I guess they have to, right? Because it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah,
here this is from Ken Levine. It's very important to us that playing as Elizabeth feels very different from playing as Booker. She's a different person, having gone through the experiences of Burial at Sea episode one. Has a substantial effect on her too. So it is Booker
okay.
in episode one.
Interesting. So maybe playing. He is, you know, doing more detective work.
Yeah.
Or more like adventure gamey, maybe, or something like that.
It'd be cool to see L.A. Noire in Rapture.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's style. I was gonna say with Cole Phelps.
It's supposed to be set in the late '50s. It's gonna have kind of the same style to begin with, you know.
But it is underwater, and it does have this whole environment.
It's that art noirish sort of thing going on.
Yeah. It looks like it's doing the film noir angle because it's got the clear kind of homage to that. But other than that, I don't know. Just have to wait and see. Speaking of other interesting games, actually, this one's been out for a while. If you've had a chance to try Papers, Please. It's a little indie game. I forgot the company, or maybe it's not even a company. People that made it. It's very simple. It looks like a kind of a retro, I wouldn't even say 16-bit, kind of like an 8-bit game. Yeah. And it sounds like it would be really boring. But it's. I was watching somebody's video of their gameplay for the beta or the demo of it, and it's kind of interesting in the way that it kind of makes you think about the actual world around you. So basically, Papers, Please, is you as this guy that's at this.
Is that a border crossing?
Border crossing, yeah. And you decide whether these people that want to get through the crossing get in or not. And it starts out really easy, like, okay, do they have, you know, their papers, or do they not? Do they have, like, identification, or do they not? And then as each day progresses, the requirements will be either different or more complicated. Like, for the next day, not only do they need their papers, but they also need a very specific pass that they've been given for, you know, a finite amount of time. So you have to check that information against whatever their papers are. Or you have to find inconsistencies with information. Like, for example, if somebody gives you an ID card and they're a guy, but on the sex on the ID card says female, you have to be like, what? You know, so it takes a lot of paying attention to details. But what's interesting, too, is that I noticed, at least from the demo, people always have kind of a... I mean, granted, it's very brief, but people have, like, little kind of sob stories, like, please, I just need to get through, or something like that. Or, like, if you ask them a question, they'll purposely kind of avoid answering it, which makes you go, like, But, so that's kind of interesting, because it makes you feel sort of like the god of the border crossing. But then they take you down. They take you down a notch, though, because at the end of the day, so the faster you get through these people, the more you get paid. So that's the incentive for you to be quick but efficient. Because the more mistakes you make, I think, I don't know if it deducts from your money.
It has to do with the money you give your family at the end of the day, I think.
No, that's what I meant. So
yeah. Well, I mean, and I think you'll if you mess up, it draws money away from you.
Yeah, you'll get a certain amount of money. You'll get less money if you fuck up or if you just don't go through as many people. And then whatever money you get at the end of the day, you have to allocate towards, like, food, medicine, clothing or shelter or whatever, like heat. For your family. So sometimes I noticed the guy that was playing it would forego, like, hey, they got food and they got whatever. We can forego some heat for the day or something like that. but you have to cross your fingers because I think this is sort of randomized. So what if one day you have a sick kid and then you have to have medicine as part of factoring into your paycheck? So
yeah.
I have
a question.
Yeah.
Is it fun?
It looked actually kind of fun because it's like, it's fun in the sense that you are, like, it feels like it could be a real job, but it's in a video game atmosphere, so you're like, whatever. But it's interesting in a kind of meta, like, fourth wall kind of way, because as you're playing it, there's a lot of stuff that you start realizing about how this whole situation works that makes you think about, like, is this reflecting how I feel about things? Like, how I would react in a lot of situations. Like, for example, the guy that was playing the demo, at a certain point, he was starting to be like, I can't deal with this shit. And he was just a guy going through these things. And then what was interesting as a viewer of this is I noticed he started treating them less as, like, people, as cases, and more as just, you know, like, papers that need to go through. And even he recognizes at a certain point, it's like you get this kind of dead-end kind of effect as you see like actual faces of people that need to get through this border crossing. And then randomly, like one guy, he was like, I can't do this. Like he was going to lift up the door to say like, okay, let's get this guy's paper. And immediately the guy like tries to run across the border and jump over the fence. And then he gets shot. So for that day, they just have to, you know, close down the whole border. And so you're kind of abruptly stopped from getting your money that day. So there's a lot of, it feels at least like there's a lot of randomized events that can happen. So it kind of keeps you on your toes a little bit. But the concept's really interesting.
Well, the design of the game, the graphical design, reminds me of something like those old, like an old Carmen Sandiego game. You remember those ones on the floppies?
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah,
yeah, it's like the exact same graphical stylings and kind of the way the characters are designed.
They have that weird thing where it's like everybody looks like they're two-toned, and they don't have very much detail. So it was kind of funny because there were some very kind of fugly-looking like men and women. But then they were, like, ambiguous looking. So when the guy was playing, at one point, it was one of those discrepancies where I think it said male or female or whatever on the card. But, like, he couldn't tell. He's like, is that a guy or a girl? Like, I don't really know. But you can kind of check. There's this little red line thing you can check to kind of analyze the situation and then confirm if, indeed, that is, like, the wrong gender of the person or whatever. Or whatever the wrong information is. But it's that simple of a look that makes things a little kind of tricky to differentiate every now and then. Yeah. But
hey, I really want to pick this game up so bad.
Yeah, no, as a concept, it's really cool. Yeah. I think it's pretty inexpensive from what I understand.
It was on sale on Steam for a little while ago, but I don't know about now.
Yeah, I'm sure it's only like, it couldn't be more.
It's an indie game. It's got to be less than $10, I bet.
Yeah, so that seems pretty worthwhile. In terms of big games, GTA 5 hit this last week, so my producer took off a whole week of vacation so he could get his mitts on it.
Just 1 second. I want to say it is $10 right now.
So. It is $10? Okay.
Yeah.
So that's totally worth getting. But in terms of GTA, he still hasn't even finished it. I think he's like maybe 70% done, and you spent like a whole week playing it. So,
yeah, I think I'm maybe 15% done after 5 hours. So
you're playing it. So you've only unlocked, there's three characters. There's Franklin, Trevor, and Michael. And I think you said you only have Michael and Franklin at the moment.
Yep. Yes, indeed.
Trevor's really weird. But what's interesting is, from watching Chase play it, the producer, yeah, I feel like I have to keep saying that.
He who shall not be named.
Yes. So while watching Chase play, it's interesting to see kind of what you were thinking you were getting from the trailers and what actually seems to be happening in the game. Because at least from my impression, I could be wrong. But it seems like you can't quite freely travel between the three people all the time. Like it seems like there's specific points where you need to. And then maybe other points you're slightly locked out. Do you know if that's the case with the two guys?
I mean, I guess when you're in the middle of a mission with another guy, like you probably can't switch.
Okay.
But I haven't tried during missions. But otherwise, I can switch, you know, if I'm just walking around.
Okay. And what do you think of, like, the at least for those two guys, their personality types? Like, Chase likes Franklin the best of the three. He seems kind of the most easy to relate to, I suppose, in comparison?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't know. I like them both. I guess I'm not really... I'm not diving into as many missions yet because I kind of just want to, you know, lollygag around town.
Yeah.
You know, and just kind of soak a lot of it in. So I'm not progressing through a lot of the missions, so I'm getting a ton of character yet. But yeah, I mean, Franklin's cool.
Yeah, Chase, you know how you can customize all your characters? Chase just had to give everybody like a fucking hobo beard. I don't know why. He's like, okay, can I put a beard? Yes? Done. Like, that is the requirement for some reason. I totally forgot about that angle where you can just like make them wear whatever you want. You can make them look pretty obnoxious too, which is funny. but one of the things people have been talking about regarding GTA 5 is Leigh Alexander, who's a game journalist, wrote an opinion piece about GTA 5 on Gamma Sutra, which I will try to put a link to in the show notes on the site. But she had a lot of comments that were really things I hadn't thought about until, you know, you actually sit down and think about them in terms of how GTA as a series is kind of
stagnated.
Yeah, like I was gonna say hit a wall, but it hasn't quite hit a wall. It's just come up to it and said, what are we going to do? Huh?
It's plateaued the word.
Yeah, sure. Because she made some good points about, like, for example, when people were really pissed off about, I think, was it San Andreas? One of the ones where you could kill the prostitute and take the money back.
You could do that in GTA 3, I think.
Three, yeah. Okay. But like, she was indicating there are all these things in the previous games where you're initially shocked. You're like, oh my God, can't believe that they would do this. And then that's kind of worn off. And she was saying, you know, for 5, she was actually almost disappointed that there wasn't anything, like, new and shocking to her. It's like she was always expecting something kind of like a risk-taking in a GTA game, because that seems kind of what they thrive on, you know, to be, like, the headlines for that week of, like, oh, my God, did you see what GTA did this time, you know? But it's surprisingly, I don't know if you'd call it safe, in its approach. It does the stuff that it knows you like as a GTA game and doesn't really expand too far. Like, and there's this kind of frat humor that she mentions that I saw a lot of too. Like, for example, I think it's instead of the NASDAQ, it's called the BOSAC or something like that. Like, you can look at the in-game financial
stock.
Yeah, Jaguars, Faguar.
There's
things like that.
Stuff is called silly shit. Like, it does actually read as very frat humor style, you know, like, it's not very nuanced or anything. Of course, the thing that everybody picks up on in her article, but when I read it, it was just like one of the paragraphs, was the fact that, like, oh, big surprise, no lead female characters again, like a playable female. And then everybody just like, oh, do we have to provide female characters for everything? Like, when have you done that?
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, wow, equality is such a fucking terrible thing. You know, it's not like saying you can't have a guy character as well. But I can understand, like, if you have three guy characters, why couldn't one of them be a girl? You can have.
I don't know. Do you really want Rockstar handling a female character? I mean,
that was kind of my thought process on that one. Like,
but still, I mean, they could.
Well, I mean, the guys are, you know, equally shitty already. So,
it's hard to talk about because it's not going to be
some great, you know,
no.
example or something. But yeah, I think a playable female, you know,
it would have at least
isn't a stretch.
See, the issue I have, just from watching it, and the issue that she clearly has, is that you have three guys. They're all kind of the same. I mean, they have variations in what they're like as characters. However, the shit you're doing is the same. A lot of their attitudes and stuff is kind of the same. Yeah, you do have, like, quirks that each one of them has, but you're not really getting some huge value for your dollar in terms of, like you would think. Three characters seems like a massive, like, risk to do. But when you're actually playing it, it doesn't really seem that way. You're like, oh, okay. Like, it's just woven into the story more, and it doesn't really... I mean, it's cool that each one of them, for example, you can collect different cars or different weapons or whatever with each character. And with the social club thing online, you can actually see... Like, it records all that information, which is crazy. You could see... on, like, Firefox or whatever, like, a real browser, not the in-game browser, you can see all your stats and, like, what your individual characters have accomplished. But when you think about it, yeah, they're three different characters, but you're, I don't know, the bonus that you're getting for playing as three different people doesn't seem to be, like, it's not, like, some big advantage of doing that. You could be playing as just Franklin or just Michael or something and having these guys come in occasionally, and I think, at least plot-wise, it would still... kind of read the same.
Yeah.
So I think for her, and maybe for some other people, that initial thing that they were doing in the trailers, bragging about, like, oh, zip into somebody else's body and then, you know, switch characters and all this stuff, didn't quite pay off the way that I think maybe people were imagining it would.
Yeah.
Personalities are a little too similar. If you had one that was maybe like some total Weasley nerd guy that can't fight that well or something like that, you know, but he's really smart, so he can
have... This is going to be a weird comparison, but if you had sort of like a Mick Foley-esque kind of thing going on, I don't know if anybody here is familiar with Mick Foley, but he was a wrestler. And he had three distinct personalities, and like if you pissed him off, he would switch into another mode, or if you made him happy, he would switch back to like dude love or something.
That's
there was the wrestler, there was the friendly guy, and there was
I remember that. Didn't he have like a mask or something he would wear too?
Mankind wore the mask, yeah.
And
but I mean, like if you had something sort of like that going on, I could see that being really
cool. So how old were you when you watched WWF?
10 to 14 in that range.
Okay.
Middle schoolish era.
That's still acceptable, I think.
Well, it was late '90s, so everyone was into that crazy ass shit back then.
But it was
that weird era where like everything became hyper violent and hyper sexualized, and you know, I was in middle school, so of course I was part of the target product.
But in a sense, that is sort of like what's going on. They have varying personalities, but always feels like it's kind of halves of the same coin, you know?
Right.
Because they're all into doing violence, and they're all
criminals.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Like, you know,
if you had three characters, think of like the possibilities. If you actually had each one of those characters being part of a different facet of this story, like maybe one of them isn't really into crime or handles the whole like financial side of things, or you know, is more of like the you know always wears the suits but gets things done, you know, like in a more in a cleaner way or something like that. You know, so at least. The gameplay doesn't necessarily have to be different for each one, but I think their approaches should be different. I mean, you have Trevor, who is the quote-unquote crazy one, so yeah, he's kind of different, but Franklin and Michael are pretty relatively normal, comparatively speaking.
Yeah.
And so you're not getting like a crazy amount of variety. Mm. So from what she was saying in her opinion piece, I could totally agree with that. And she actually made this is getting a little kind of fourth wall-ish, I guess, for the game, but one thing she noticed was as open as this world is, there's an unusual sense of being not as free as you think to do everything. Like, yes, you can go off and run and shoot as many people as you want, and yes, you can, you know, do these mini games and all that kind of thing, but just like other games, you eventually go back. Like, you have to go back to the main story to actually get ahead anywhere. You know, like, it always just feels like you're just kind of killing time to get to the real thing that's in front of you.
Wasn't that the case with all open world games, though?
Right, but I think she was saying with GTA 5, with how they have kicked everything up a notch in terms of, like, realism, it makes it even more noticeable. Because it's like, the closer you get to it being, like, a real life, the more you think, like, why am I being so confined? Why can't I, you know, kind of spread my wings a little bit and kind of think outside the box, as it were. Mm. And I
the skybox.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
But I can see what she's getting at. I think in terms of a video game atmosphere, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to break out of, at least right now. But I can appreciate what she's saying. It's like you're being given this illusion of being given like a toy box and saying like, hey, go, be free, do whatever. But there's still confines to it that you're not aware of till like much later.
I feel like that's happened across pretty much every game genre you can think of, at least on the, you know, not the indie scale, but what's it called, the corporation
mainstream
scale.
Yeah.
Mainstream.
Yeah.
Like this is like Mario 64 was a game that gave you a million options, and then Galaxy it was a great game that like. You could go and get stars in New York, but you had to go on that one path once you entered that section of the world.
Right.
Yeah.
And I felt like 64, you could do any star in any order you wanted. And
but see, that's
I just feel like every game's kind of gone back on that on open that. World. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the tricky part. It's like if you had like a truly open world game, then you would have to figure out how to get around that problem of because, you know, GTA has. If you follow it, a story. So how would you keep it feeling open world and not inevitably filter you back in to the linearity that is the main plot line, you know? Like, you'd have to do some kind of choose-your-own-adventure kind of thing where you'd have a multiple branching thing depending on what you really wanted to do. Like, say, for example, and I think, I'm pretty sure this is going to be the case in the game when I finally play it, like, you'll feel like you could do whatever you want, make whatever choices you want, kill or not kill whoever you want, but then you're going to get, you're going to lock yourself into a mission, especially probably one near the end, where, surprise, surprise, you're going to be in a, like a cutscene or something where you're not going to get a choice anymore, and you're going to be forced to, like, go this avenue that you probably didn't want to go to, because it's not like a BioWare, well, some BioWare games where you can actively, where you can actively decide, you know, at many different points what you want to do. GTA is like 90% whatever you want, and then the important 10% is like, no, you're doing this. That's it. You're just doing this. So I can understand that frustration maybe, but from a game designer standpoint, I'm not sure what you could do. Like, it'd be really tricky to move outside of that. I mean, if you had like an MMO, maybe like GTA Online would be like this, that is always ongoing. Maybe you could get away with it by not having really a main story so that you never get stuck in that trap to begin with. Like, it's just always going to be you and your friends or your enemies just kind of doing whatever the hell you want in the town. But I can see what she's saying about a lot of stuff feeling kind of empty, because it's like, it's almost like when you go on one of those like Hollywood streets where there's the facades of the buildings, but then like only a couple you can actually go into. And once you recognize that, you're like, oh.
Like, well, it kind of reminds me of a lot of Rockstar games in general, is like when you go around places. Like, I'm thinking of L.A. Noire just because that was a game set in L.A. or San Andreas or Los.
I will say L.A. Noire is almost the worst example. I mean, it's the best example for what you're saying, but it's the worst example of a Rockstar game because they had so many problems in production. Like, first of all, it's not really Rockstar, right? It's
Team Bondi.
Team Bondi. Then, second, they have the whole issue where every one of those faces has to be captured.
Yeah.
So that heavily restricts how many, like, dynamic kind of scenes you can run across.
Well, I'm talking about environmental things, because I think that the main complaint with something like L.A. Noire was that when you look at GTA 3 San Andreas, there's a lot of things to do besides the main story.
Right.
That wasn't the case with L.A. Noire.
No.
I don't know how it is in GTA 5.
GTA 5 seems to have a lot more. So it's not that restrictive. But, I mean, for L.A. Noire, so they shot a lot of specific scenes with those faces. And then they just were running a lot out of time, even though they spent, like, 7 years. So, like, because Chase found out, for example, sometimes you go to a diner. I think I mentioned this before. And there'd be this guy saying, let me get a bowl of that chili. And then you go to a diner, like, later, and they'd say the same fucking thing. And you're like, oh, God, what is it? Like, you instantly get that kind of Matrix feeling, like, oh, God, there's not really that much to do in this town, is there?
Yeah.
This is the same thing, like, duplicated over and over. So that kind of breaks your immersion. But GTA, I will give the credit to GTA for having amazing kind of, I don't know what you would call it, crowdsourcing, that's the wrong one. But like the way they program all the crowds and people, because it does feel like they do different things. Sometimes they'll react differently to the same situation, and they try to make it so it feels as dynamic as possible, which, you know, they've had several games to iterate on, so I could see why they're kind of the leaders in the field in terms of doing that. But I would just say to anybody that's playing GTA 5, I'm not saying it's a bad game. It's
what's been getting, I was telling my roommate this earlier, Colin Birch of paying attention to mainstream video game reviews is a rare thing, but it's, I mean, this thing's been getting pretty good reviews.
It's, you know, I mean, like 9.5s
and
I think it was like a 98 at Metacritic last time.
Yeah, that's pretty high.
I will
you
say,
know, you, even for a critically acclaimed game, it's pretty high.
Right, you're getting a lot of bang for your buck, basically.
Yeah.
Basically, definitely is what I meant to say. Not basically. I said basically too much. But so you get a lot of bang for your buck. So it's definitely worth your time. I'm just saying, and what I guess Alexander is saying is, like, it feels like they could have pushed it or try different things. Like, it seems like some things they did were very safe.
It seems like the Dark Knight of video games. It is the Dark Knight of video games.
Yeah. Yeah.
High budget, you know, it's not bad. I mean, I'm not saying Dark Knight is bad. I'm sure that GTA 5 isn't bad, but they don't offer really anything that new.
I will say their face animation. I'm gonna be a bitch about this, of course. Their face animation was a downer because I was expecting for some reason from the trailers I was expecting it to look better than it ended up actually looking in game. And I'm not you know dissing any of the animators there. It's just that it feels like I don't know if they were just being told to be really like subtle with it or whatever. But there's sometimes in the cutscenes I was watching where they don't quite look as expressive as maybe they could be. And I'm not sure if that's a stylistic choice, perhaps, or if it's just, you know, maybe there's just too much stuff in the game and they just didn't have time, which might be more realistic.
Will they use mocap in this game like they did for L.A. Noire?
I mean, I'm assuming for the bodies, of course, they must have. Yeah. But
I mean, the facial mocap like they did.
Face, I'm not sure. I would assume at this point, probably. I mean, that might explain why it doesn't look super expressive, because it might have been one of those cases where they got so much data, so maybe they just have to basically plop it on the face, add a little adjustment, and then just kind of go, you know, next on to the next. So that could have been the case. But overall, though, they do some great stuff, so I can't knock it too hard. I just think, like,
This is one of those games, it's like you can't really say anything negative about it, but there's nothing really super groundbreaking or positive about it.
Well, that's why, you know? Like, even in her...
It's just kind of there.
Yeah. You know? Like, in her review and other people's reviews, the main thing it comes down to is, do you like GTA? If you do, you'll like this. It won't be a big surprise, you know? If you haven't experienced the series at all, maybe it will be a bit of a shock or two, but if you've played any of the previous ones, you'll fall into this one really easily, and it's not like, you know, you won't miss a beat. But it's also indicating that there's not, like, a lot of super freshness to it.
Yeah.
There are some pretty funny characters, though. Franklin's friend Lamar is pretty funny. If you've... hey, Adam, if you've run across yes. Lamar. Lamar is pretty funny. He's kind of a dick sometimes.
Yeah, he's a real dick a lot of times. But,
like, he kind of shits on Franklin a lot, but he's pretty funny when he does it. So, yeah.
Did you see the employee of the month scene?
Yes,
at all?
Employee of the month scene is really funny.
I thought that was great. He's like, if there's a name up on a wall, I want it to be my name.
Yeah. Even when Franklin is like, what the fuck is this? Like, there's the two different viewpoints. Like, Franklin's like, I don't care about employee of the month. But Lamar's like, fuck, I want to be employee of the month. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I recommend it. At the very least, to rent it. But, I guess you kind of know what you're getting into at this point if you've played the series.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's Grand Theft Auto.
The fifth one. I want to see what people, what the responses to the online version are, though, because I haven't experienced
that yet. When is that supposed to, I mean, is it, can
I
you play
online? I think
it's
supposed to be out,
isn't it? Is it? I don't know. I don't own it yet.
Oh, GTA Online?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, October 1st.
Oh, October.
Oh, that late.
Yeah.
Hmm. Is it going to be cross-platform? Will PS4 players be able to play with Xbox
players? I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Didn't they do... is it GTA? There was some game that they announced they're going to be offering... It's probably not a free upgrade, but they're going to be offering an upgrade to PS4.
Oh, yeah. Or like a $10 upgrade for some game, right?
Oh, Final Fantasy 14 is offering that, actually. Yeah. But I think other games will probably follow suit and say, like, hey... You know, you're so close to the end of this console cycle that we probably need to sweeten the deal, you know, to get you to buy it by saying, hey, just for like a couple bucks, you can get the next version of it as well. Speaking of Final Fantasy 14,
yeah.
I've been playing it a lot.
Oh, 14? Wait, 14's a new online. I keep thinking of 15. Like, I was just on 4chan the other day reading about the newest Final Fantasy. What was supposed to be 13 verses?
Maybe for next week's episode.
No, but I'm just looking at it. It's just like, it's Final Fantasy. It's just like,
if 14 is a pretty different...
No, I'm talking about 15. 15. I know it is, but I keep mixing them up because it's all melding together now.
Right. I'll mention maybe next week because let's have a nice short episode this week. Next week I'll talk a bit more about 14. I've been playing it since launch, and got some interesting things to talk about in regards to that game. It's pretty. It's like night and day, though. I'll say compared to if you ever played 1.0 of 14, you know, like the original release of 14, that was complete ass. this version, which is called a Realm Reborn, is a massive improvement. It kind of does do the plateau thing where it's like you get to a really amazing point and then you finish the main story and then you're like,
okay,
now what? You know, but a lot of MMOs seem to have that problem.
I was gonna say, I bet Nox understands this because he hates MMOs.
Well, we'll talk. You can rage about it next week, perhaps. So
I wasn't gonna rage about that. I wasn't even gonna rage about 15. It's just like it's the same thing with GTA. It's like it's there. It's a Final Fantasy game. We knew it was coming. Well, the only difference is instead of being the fifth rendition, this is the 15th.
Well, it used to be 13. What was it called?
It was 13 verses.
Verses.
13 verses, and so they changed. And so Nomura, whoever's in charge of this, changed it to be the actual 15th rendition of Final Fantasy.
Yeah, and that thing was in production for so long.
The thing was, is like, I don't know the two guys who were behind Final Fantasy 13, but obviously, I don't know if we talked about this, but Final Fantasy 13 had a huge backlash against it, just how it was just linear, and I know that there were two different designers behind it, and they totally fucked up what people thought Final Fantasy was supposed to be.
Yeah.
And so Nomura, the character designer, I guess he's kind of the director now, you know, is kind of, I guess he's kind of the head honcho nowadays when it comes to Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
And he made 13 verses in response to 13 because he didn't like the direction those two other guys were taking. But eventually it kind of turned into 15, you know, the 15th game in the Final Fantasy series. And that's what they revealed it at E3, right?
Yeah, I saw the trailer for it. It's funny because it looks like it's like a present day Final Fantasy, but then they're running around with like some kind of magic powers and swords and things. Magic
and it sounds pretty typical to me.
You know what?
It sounds like a fan fiction piece.
Well, it doesn't. It's not typical at all. Just because the last time I've seen something that vaguely looks present time-ish was like 7, maybe
or 8.
Well,
8, 9, 10. They do it in every game. They've always blended.
They didn't do it. Whoa, they didn't do it in 9.
No.
Nine was more traditional, but they did it in 7, they did it in 8, they did it in 10. I don't know about
But this one, as opposed to it still looking fantasy-based, at least for the cinematics they showed for 15, it looks like it's like somewhere in Europe, maybe, or something like that. Like, it looks really close to like regular architecture and that kind of, like, it's the extra step towards like realism, and then all of a sudden you have people with like magical floating swords, and you're like, what the fuck is going on?
They have that hair that looks like they worked on for about 8 hours that morning.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is Nomura. They have, I think this is a Nomura thing, is like, they'll have the hair and all that stuff, and then you'll have really pretty, like, boy men, and then you'll have, like, older guys. Like, no, that's the thing. Like, they don't look like...
Then you have the solid snakes.
No, that's actually what I was going to say. Because, there's a big jump. There's a big jump between...
Yeah. There was a picture that book. Where... It had the typical kind of looking, visual K looking sort of character. You know what I mean? Visual K being a Japanese genre of music, juxtaposed next to the kind of the gruff looking, kind of solid snake looking character.
Yeah, you have somebody that looks like Gakt, and then somebody that looks like.
I would like to see that image.
I don't know where it is. It was just a still from a video, I'm sure, but.
Sure.
You know, I gotta give it to Square. They still make their visuals look clean and. Very, very visually impressive, but as far as the actual aesthetic goes, I fucking hate it.
It's very LucasArtish in that regard.
It is. It's like, you know, it's very clean, which doesn't really bother me, but that whole Visual K, I never liked Visual K to begin with, so it's just kind of...
Well, they're kind of feeding the fans, though, because the fans seem to like it, so it's kind of like, as long as the fans like it...
It's just the cycle, you know, they found their audience and they want to stick to it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where if they broke away from that, there would be a huge backlash and they'd lose a shit ton of money.
Yeah, it's the same thing that basically every Nintendo thing stuck in.
Like yeah, Zelda, exactly.
Right.
Zelda trying something new in Wind Waker, and you know, people whine, you know, half the fans whined about that, and the other were like, this is the best Zelda ever made. Mm. They don't, you know, this is...
Yeah, I guess, I could, yeah. which I enjoyed that sort of breakaway because, like, I don't know, there even Twilight Princess, which was pretty, you know, it had a lot of traditional aspects to it. It was just like, I enjoyed it a lot, and I've called it my favorite Zelda game, and
even that was an exceptionally divisive game.
Yeah,
but I mean, besides the whole 8.8 fiasco, I mean, I'm with Nox here. You know, I think Ocarina of Time was cool, but I honestly have to say that Twilight Princess was the kind of just the more interesting game. You know,
but see, this is what people always do, and it's frustrating because it's like you should really be judging the games based on their own kind of merits. A lot of people will say, "Well, Twilight Princess isn't as good because it didn't start these game mechanics the way that Ocarina of Time did."
Yeah.
Which may be valid, but also, like, there's stuff in Twilight Princess that Ocarina doesn't have, and, you know, vice versa. So I get a little frustrated when people kind of do that and have that as the deciding thing for why something is better or worse. Like, yeah. I understand, I don't agree with it, but I understand that a lot of people say that Super Mario World is the best, you know, retro Mario game. But I always say that Mario 3 is. Now, I'll use the fact that it did the world map thing first as one of the reasons. I wouldn't say it's the main reason. But I do know people that will say, like, no, that's the thing that started it all. So that's, like, the major, like, turning point for that game series.
Just to throw this game out there for fun, it's like saying, you know, Doom is the end-all, be-all of the first-person shooter.
Right.
Because it was the first one to add all these aspects and blah, blah, blah. You know.
Well, think about how long that first-person shooters were called Doom clones for years after Doom was released, you know?
Well, they were also called Doom clones because they were, you know, using the same...
Well, they were using the same engine. Yeah, but, I mean, even for... I mean, what was Quake called a Doom clone at the time?
I think when it
first called Duke 3D a Doom clone.
Yeah,
it was really...
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Duke 3D was the real transition period there.
Yeah.
Doom clone was a phrase that was just used. It was a catch-all phrase for a while there. The first-person shooter wasn't even a thing.
Yeah,
they were just Doom clones. But I mean, what I'm saying is, like, that's the sort of like, well, Doom was the first one to do this and this and that, so it has to be the greatest of all time.
Right.
Whereas, I mean, we've come to a point where System Shock 2, for example, introduced a whole other aspect of character design.
You know, I still need to play that.
Yeah. Nox really likes it. He's been raving about it.
I have it on Steam. It's like I keep intending to play it, and then something distracts me.
You can really see how BioShock took a lot from System Shock 2.
Uh-huh.
But I think in terms of like atmosphere and story, BioShock is where it's at. In terms of depth of gameplay, I think System Shock 2 has to have the edge on that category.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Interesting.
It's very... You have so many options in that game, it blows my mind.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Dude, speaking of old games, you know, wasn't it the 30th anniversary of the Famicom?
Right.
A month or two ago.
Doesn't that make you feel fucking old?
Well, I mean, I wasn't even alive when it came out.
But, oh, my God.
I mean, some of us were, but I wasn't.
I was.
I was not.
Yeah, Iggy was.
So just the easy was.
Man.
But Iggy, what is your favorite game? You mentioned Mario 3, but do you have a favorite other Famicom or NES game?
Well, same thing.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean.
No, I know. It's kind of a tough... It's a tough toss-up between, for me personally, Zelda 1 and Mario 3.
Yeah.
Just because for me, an indication of my favorite game is not just, like, the quality of the game, but also how many times I'm willing to play it. And, both of those games, I feel like at any point I could just pick up and play it forever and not really get tired of it. But there's other games that I probably would get tired of after a while. but Mario 3 probably a little bit more so than Zelda. Because as fun as Zelda is, it gets very samey with a lot of the... I mean, granted, every dungeon's a little bit different, but it's like it's kind of rinse and repeat. Like, go in the above ground, get some rupees, get the better outfit, now go find the bracelet and go in the dungeon again. Oh, here's another dungeon. And some more dungeons.
That's every Zelda game.
But as great as the experience actually is when you play it, it still feels like Mario 3 has more variety in it. Like, Jesus, all these different suits and items, and every world is totally different than the previous world. Like, Giant Land, come on. You know, like,
Giant Land was so cool.
Yeah. And the fucking
you make me fly anyway.
Fucking Skyworld, which totally blew for some reason blew my mind as a kid because I was like, I thought I was done with the level. Oh, it's going up into the clouds! Oh my god!
Yeah, that's
awesome. Yeah. So that's just me. But that game was pretty top notch. Plus the fact that, like, I mean, granted, my brother and I played a lot of video games, but for some reason Mario 3 was just kind of waited till one or the other was done. But you could do the two-player thing in there, which we would kind of be dicks about it. Like, you want to let the other person go by you to do the next level, but you'll always press the fucking button really fast because you're like, no, I'm going to catch you in the versus thing. Because I'm competitive like that, so it's like, If you're crafty enough to get past me before I press the button and you get stuck in the versus mode, then you deserve to do the next level. But yeah, so Mario 3 I think would be my pick. What about you guys?
Knox, what do you think?
Ooh, that's a...
Yeah. That's a toughie for me, too, because I never owned an NES. I had a Genesis. No,
I mean, there's a lot of other
games. I always played when I was a kid. I mean, I didn't play much NES. I had the system... Wow. But one game I played a ton of was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2.
Yeah,
I was going to say that exact game.
Oh, shit.
Arcade port, yeah. Which was just like...
Was that the arcade?
Oh.
Yes.
There was there was one where there was an overworld and you could kind of go in the sewer and fight shit.
I don't remember which one that was. That's the first one and it's like the fucking hardest one. It's like the balance.
It's the most impossible game.
That one's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, which one was Turtles in Time then?
That was 2 and 3, kind of.
Yeah. Was that on the NES?
Okay, so here's the confusing thing with the Turtles games, right? Yeah. Turtles in Time, for example, on the NES was kind of 3, the Manhattan Project, but because I had that game. If you had the Genesis one, wasn't it something about like the stones of... No, wait. I can't remember what the subtitle for that one was. The Hyperstone Heist or something, right? Hyperstone Heist. And then the Super Nintendo one actually was called Turtles in Time. So I think those all, I believe, somebody's going to say I'm wrong, but I believe they all had very similar levels from, I guess, whatever the arcade, like the main, wasn't there like an arcade Turtles in Time?
Yeah.
Was there?
I think so.
I remember the original arcade game, but was there a Turtles in Time arcade game?
All I know is that a lot of them shared the same thing, and I'm not sure which thing is like the originator of those levels, but I know like that they were all kind of different adaptations of the same thing, essentially.
Mm. Yeah.
But I like the Hyperstone Heist. I rented that a bunch of times from Blockbuster back in the day. But I own 2 and 3, the Manhattan Project and... what was the one for 2? What was it called?
I don't remember.
God,
damn, it was so long ago.
Same year, a game that borrowed many elements.
Yeah.
But 2 was actually kind of hard.
This is from Turtles in Time. So they're similar, but not the exact same game.
You know what? I think it might have actually just been called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, the arcade game or something.
Well, yeah, that's what it was. It's the one I'm talking about. That's the one I played a lot of.
Yeah. Do you remember the shitty, I didn't play it, but I kept seeing ads in the video game magazines for that fighting game that they had, Tournament Fighters or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that was so bad.
Did you remember that?
And the characters that they made up for the game were ridiculous, too.
Yeah, why is that? Whenever you have to make a fictional character in a fighting game, it's always, like, a dud.
Retarded.
Or, yeah, like, do you remember Eternal Champions? Eternal Champions was like all entirely trying to be original characters, and that was the worst crock of shit.
I remember the cover of the game more than I remember the game.
I swear to God.
It has a really shitty cover.
Wasn't the cover with like, it looked like Hammerman or something on the front? I can't remember.
Yeah, there's a bunch of generic kind of guys like on the cover.
I'm going to look it up right now while we talk. But yeah, there was this whole like fighting game thing back in the day, and then they tried to do it with the Ninja Turtles. It didn't work.
And the LAPD is really coming.
Yeah, I don't know what is going on there.
5 stars.
Oh, here, I remember this. So Eternal Champions, the Genesis box, there is a guy that kind of looks like an MC, like the Hammer Man, MC Hammer, because he's got the big shades and the flat top head.
Yeah.
And it's next to this like Beast Man and some girl that has almost no clothes on. So
not much has changed then.
It looks... Do you know who you know who Boris Vallejo is?
No.
He's this comic artist that used to do a lot of a lot of those trading cards, you know, that people used to collect for like Marvel characters and stuff.
Yeah.
He would sign his name Boris on a lot of the art. Like this, the Eternal Champions cover kind of looks like it was done by Boris Vallejo. What? Maybe it was. There's like some fucking like signature in the bottom of this thing. Anyway, bad game. So, you'd say Ninja Turtles 2 for you?
Yeah, that's what I'll go with.
That's a good choice. Okay, how about you guys?
Really good choice. Adam, you go first.
I think you nailed it, EG. Zelda 1, Mario 3.
What?
Man, what else, though?
You can't make the same thing, though.
No, I'm totally... No, that's... You were right. Like,
say Blaze of Steel. Say it. I
could dust off. What?
So, would you say for you, maybe Zelda edges out? Or do you actually think they're pretty even?
No, yeah. Actually, I think Zelda would take one. So, wait. You said Mario 3 was your first pick? And Zelda's second pick?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd flop that. But otherwise, I'd stick with those. I mean, I played a lot of really bad games all the time, but I don't want to go back to those ever. So,
yeah.
I mean,
Dr. Chaos, for example.
If you really want to choose Turtles 2, Colin, I can always go with Blades of Steel because there's nothing funny than just running two hockey dudes into each other three times and then starting a fight like that.
Oh my God.
I'm trying to think of games that I played a little later on, like things like Kid Icarus and things like that, you know. I'm looking through a list here on Wikipedia.
Funny, wasn't Kid Icarus one of the earlier games?
It was an earlier game, and it was actually a really early game. I think it was like 86 or 87. Battletoads.
Fuck.
I forgot about this
game. Oh God, Battletoads, yes.
You know
Contra.
I know I'm biased when I ask this, but have you seen the Game Center CX episode of Battletoads?
No.
It's fucking have I talked about this show before?
I think maybe.
I want to preface this by saying I went to Otakon this year in Baltimore and at the beginning of August, and I usually do a cosplay there, and for this year I did Chief Arino from Game Center CX, a Japanese TV show, right? But I mean, the premise of the game is he plays all these old video games on Famicom and SNES and things like that. And one of the more famous later episodes is Battletoads, and it's just fucking hilarious. He plays this game, and he gets really into it. It's like a whole 2-part episode and everything, because I mean, Battletoads is like infamously difficult, right?
Yeah.
And so he plays this game for 2 episodes. It's the way he gets into it.
Is he good at it, though, or is he awful?
He gets good at it. I mean, Battletoads is one of those games where it's just trial and error, you know, and you die and you get to continue and you just kind of go back to where you were.
Yeah. I did play more than the original Battletoads for some reason. My brother and I used to play as kids a lot Battletoads Double Dragon. The one that was the weird crossover. Yeah, I don't know why we played it way more, and it was really we never beat it. We got to, if you guys played it, it's probably been a really long time, but you may remember there's a part eventually that you get to that you're out in space, and you have to do this kind of like, it's like sort of like you're in little individual ships, and it's kind of like a game of asteroids.
Yeah.
And like everything's just killing you so fucking fast, but then there's all these little asteroids, and your ships are going pew, 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 and the whole thing. So we got just past that part. When you're at the next, like, inner huge spaceship that's owned by that queen lady, whoever the bad guy girl is. And then we would subsequently die right after that. And I swear to God, we've never been able to get past that part. So we've never seen the end of the game, which I'm sure is a really shitty ending. But very difficult game. I mean, I don't know if it's as difficult as the first Battletoads. Because that does seem to have the crown for the, you know, reigning champion of difficult games.
That fucking level that everyone talks
about. Man, there are so many. There's so many Simpsons games.
The racing
games.
Level. Everyone always mentions
that
level.
Yeah, that level. Oh my fucking God. That level.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever got past that level.
That was the part in the TV show where he actually got really excited. At one point he exclaims, wow, this game is really fucking fun or something like that, you know. But, oh my God, there's so many Simpsons games in the early 90s.
Oh,
I had the Bart versus the Space Mutants is the one.
Yeah, I was just reading. Oh, Kirby!
Oh, Kirby's Adventure.
Yeah.
You know what?
You know what game I forgot until just now? Sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say Kirby's Adventure is an honorable mention because that's a really good game. And it also has a lot of kind of replayability because it does the whole world map thing too, where you can always go back into places and like find secret shit and open up new things with the secret shit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Good gameplay.
They released games up until 1994. Holy shit.
Yeah, Nintendo had a great run with the original NES. Man, really good run.
I guess I'll throw another one of my honorable mentions out there. Mega Man 2.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah.
That's what I played a ton of that back. That would be an honorable mention for sure for me.
Maybe the best music. See, David's not here, otherwise he would chime in. But I think he would say what's his
favorite NES game? Sonic.
He is actually a huge fan. He's a huge fan of the Mega Man series. So I can't remember. I always get these mixed up. I think he says that his favorite music is from the second one, but the gameplay from the third one, or it's the other way around. It's one combination of those.
Probably gameplay from the second one.
Yeah, like the second supposed to be the best in terms of gameplay.
Is it?
Gameplay.
The gameplay is just okay in it. It could get a little handsier. I would like to see that, but
it does do that. For like now, I have your power. You know.
Yeah.
Right. I just wanted to, I want them to suck it. I want Mega Man to suck it out of them.
I suck
the power away from them.
I fucking hate you guys.
All right, I think
we warned this out.
Yeah. Well, did you say what yours was, though, Colin?
I did. I said that I thought Battletoads would be up there, Kirby.
Okay.
As well as all the ones you guys listed.
Okay, I thought maybe you hadn't actually decided on which one of those.
There's just so many.
There's so many.
I just realized that I have a ton of NES games under my bed right now that I'm sitting on.
What are you doing, fapping to them?
I could just look
at them.
Yeah, I could slide these out. Let's see what I have. I have, wow, there's a lot of crappy games here.
Let's read them off.
TNC Surf Designs.
What the fuck?
Yeah, that's bad. Life Force was pretty cool, I think. You guys ever play Life Force?
No.
Karate Champ. RC Pro-Am.
Yes. Oh, Jesus.
Pinball Quest.
Pinball Quest sounds so awesome.
Do you have Lolo's Quest?
California Games. I love California Games.
You know, I just want to say, I'm looking at the Mega Man 2 box art right now. This dude looks... A lot like Captain Falcon, I gotta say.
The box art.
Is that the one with
games?
The terrible art? Hang on.
Yes. No, that's the first one. No, Mega Man had the worst art you'll ever see. Mega Man 2 isn't great, but boy, Mega Man's box art.
He looks
art.
Like RoboCop.
It's phenomenal.
Go with me or there will be trouble.
No, but... I'm trying to think of... There was this... NES game I played back in the day. That was just so terrible. I can't remember the name of it right now. So I'm sorry. I failed you all.
We talked about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles a lot. Can you name your favorite line from Secret of the Ooze?
Oh, God.
I would say Major Spin Cycle.
Major Spin Cycle.
Is that or No Deposit, No Return?
Oh.
Look at Izzy.
I hate that movie.
Like,
I hate that fucking movie.
What? You hate that movie?
What? Oh,
it's terrible.
We're terrible.
Done here.
We're terrible.
You killed the conversation with that one.
We got to
go. I'll
dream
of something a little thinner.
Well, okay. It's not as bad as the third movie was particularly shit.
Well,
so.
Fuck the third movie, but the second one, come on.
We got.
It's got vanilla ice in it.
Yeah, well.
Don't worry, EG, because Michael Bay is going to save the franchise for you.
All right, let's go. We're done. We're done here.
What a way to end the podcast.
Fucking Adam, god damn it.
Michael Bay will save the Teenage Mutant.
Fascinating thing about Michael Bay is
alien Ninja Turtles.
They're not turtles, they're aliens.
I know they're not aliens anymore, but the fact that he was going to do that, I think.
Oh my god.
They still can be
alien turtles. But I mean, that's still possible, you know. God. Just confusing.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that's good for today. Thank you guys once again for listening. Sorry it's taken so long, but we're back. And we're going to be hopefully doing regular podcasts again. If you'd like to keep up with us, we have a Facebook page that we regularly post news and tidbits to, which is In the Name of Game. We have a website, which is inthenameofgame.com, where I always post every new episode and all the show notes and all the good little doodads. You can listen to previous episodes as well. And I also post links to every episode on our Twitter, which is @InTheNameOfGame, so you can follow us that way. Or if you don't want to do any of that stuff, we have a little spot on iTunes where you just look up In the Name of Game and you could subscribe and just listen to all of the episodes that way. If you have anything you'd like to talk to us about, or if you would like to tell us your favorite NES game, we have an email, which is nameofgamepodcast@gmail.com. And you can send us whatever you like, and we'll read it on the air. So, till next time, I think we'll talk about Final Fantasy XIV and whatever new news topics are up next week. We'll see you then. So, thanks everybody. Enjoy your games.
Later. Later. Go, ninja, go, ninja, go!
Oh, God.